You're listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration, a podcast dedicated to helping software executives stay on the cutting edge of sales and marketing in their industry. Let's get into the show.
Hi, welcome to B2B Revenue Acceleration. My name is Katharina Hoch, and I'm here today with Alice De Corsi, Group Chief Marketing Officer at Cognizm. How are you doing today, Alice?
Yeah, really well, thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for coming. So today we'll be getting some insights and talk a little bit more about your book, The Diary of a First-Time CMO. But before we get started, I'd love to hear a bit more about your story and everything about Cognizm.
Yeah, sure. So as you said, I'm Group CMO at Cognizm. Cognizm is the leading B2B contact data provider. We specialize really in really strong EMEA data and NAM data as well as just being an international provider and real deep focus on compliance as well. So I've been at Cognizm for over 4.5 years now, where I've sort of scaled the marketing team from a team of 3 up to nearly 40 now, where we were originally just one brand and now we're sort of 3 brands and a big global footprint as well across multiple countries. So it's been a really exciting, great growth journey, lots of learnings along the way.
It's very cool. I love your story, Alice, because you know, there are so many times we see, especially in the SaaS industry, you know, that CMOs can scale only like up to a certain point or like certain stages of companies. And it's really cool to see that you've gone from like, I think is it 3 million to 40 million or something like that?
Over 50 million now.
Over 50 million. Cool. So it's really cool to see that journey that you've been on and kind of progress in your role within the company as well. So that's pretty cool. Well done on that. And obviously you wrote a book where you kind of share a little bit of your story of how you've done that and all of the ins and outs, which, I mean, for me, reading it was super insightful because a lot of the times I could just see myself going through those same challenges. So very interesting. But what kind of motivated you and really drove you to write that book in the first place?
Well, I think it actually comes down to like sort of one of my philosophies, I think, on marketing, that I'm a big believer in this whole idea of like building a minimal viable product. And I'd been documenting my sort of, I guess, how I was building in public the whole time for the 4.5 years, documenting that journey on LinkedIn through regular posting. And that had been responded to really positively. And so one day I just sort of put out there a post saying if I was to kind of take that and make it into sort of a more in-depth look at that journey that I've been on, would that be something that people would be interested in? And that was like an overwhelming response. And so I kind of went to the team and just said, I think we've got an MVP here. We've kind of got the basis to build something a bit bigger. And it just seemed like it was a great opportunity for us to kind of also really take what we preach about, you know, this whole idea of building a media machine in your B2B organization and actually giving it a real go for Cognizm, like publishing a book, seeing how that, like taking a book to market could work for a B2B organization. So all of these things we were super interested in and we wanted to kind of like really take and leverage. And it was like a really interesting journey, a lot of hard work, a lot of late nights, but definitely worth it in the end, and really glad that we did it.
And I bet you didn't expect Stephen Bartlett to comment on your post.
Definitely not. And we didn't. I mean, we printed 100 copies. So I can say that it definitely outstripped the demand that we ever thought was there. So I think Stephen Bartlett commenting definitely helped. and definitely him, ordering a copy himself was not something I ever imagined was going to happen. So
This is amazing. And I guess it just shows that valuable content always goes a long way, right? And I think especially the way you guys put it together, it's just so relatable. So, you know, people in different stages of their kind of CMO journey, whether they are just starting marketing or kind of in a similar position to you, I think it's definitely interesting to always read into and listen to what others are doing, what's working for them, what isn't. So I really like that transparent view that you gave to the book. So well done on taking that initiative. So now we're taking a bit more of kind of the lessons that you shared in the book. What are the main lessons that you learned and maybe highlight a few that you shared in the book with our audience for those that haven't read it yet?
Probably one of the biggest challenges that I encountered during my journey as a first-time CMO was like this mindset shift. So it's a really big jump to go from being an operational executor or builder to working a lot more like strategically. And no, I think it's this big awakening of no one's going to give you the answers or point you in the right direction for where you should be spending your time or your resources. It's actually like they're looking to you to say and reassure them that you've got this under control. You know where that spend, that resource needs to be directed, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a consistent battle every day that you get into the office and you need to be really comfortable that you have put all of your bets in the right places, or at least the majority of your bets in the right places. And like I say, that no one's going to give you those answers. So you need to get really comfortable quite quickly making these types of decisions. And obviously as you scale, they become larger and they're more daunting and they have a bigger impact. So, but I suppose the good side of that is that you become more practiced. So it's been great that I have been able to scale with Cognizant, because I think that learning curve has kind of scaled with me as well. So it hasn't been like I've jumped straight in at the deep end at a 50 million ARR company. It's been like incremental changes that, I've grown alongside Cognizant. And so it's like my confidence, I guess, and in my ability to, make those calls, make those decisions. But that's definitely been the biggest challenge that I had to overcome, I think, during that journey. And it's just by doing it every day and then seeing like the results and the positive outcomes, as well as failure. Like you're going to fail at things as well, but getting comfortable with that too, that you really, I think you really, really start learning.
Yeah, 100%. And was there any kind of external factors or places or people or communities where you kind of managed to find these answers? Because I sometimes see myself in a very similar position of like, it's me that have to figure that out, right? So how the hell am I going to figure that out? So what made you get there? Like, did you just have to do a lot of research or speak to people? Or I don't know, what worked for you?
I think the main thing that I found that worked for me is like, I think you can speak to people and you can do research for sure, but ultimately your business is unique and the things that are going to drive the success of your organization and the, like, there's just so many different nuances at play. So yes, definitely I was reading, I was listening to things like Chris Walker, Refine Labs, and really trying to like make sure I was immersed in all of the latest and greatest in terms of how things were moving and marketing. But mainly, I also just had to like back myself that I could try and figure these things out. And so again, comes back to this idea of like building a lot of MVPs, deciding that we were going to build our own playbook. We weren't going to be copying anyone else's. And then also finding people who are doing parts of what you want to be doing really well and better than you, and like either partnering or working with them. So for example, we did work with Refine Labs for a while there, which really helped us. We also worked with the likes of Todd Kauser and Abade, who I think are like two of the top content creators like in the industry. And so I guess it's almost like for me, those were like cheat codes to getting to fast forwarding the learning, because they are working with multiple organizations and executing this type of thing. And so you can't really get to that level of learning as quickly as them without maybe tapping into it. So that was also something that really, really helped me as well. So identifying those people and then trying to find out ways in which we could work with them. But again, like no one's going to tell you who they should be, when's the right time to work with them, if it's going to work out. A lot of that comes to like the things you put in place, the initiatives that you, the processes that, you enact. And it's just a lot of whiteboarding, time spent with post-it notes and mirror board and all of these things. And also just being prepared to be like, you know what, some of this is going to work, some of this is not going to work. But ultimately, like you feel strongly that you're going in the right direction. And I think because I've always been tied to revenue as well, that's always directed my efforts and energy into the right places too, and helped me to keep really focused.
That makes sense. I think kind of having that North Star and knowing where you're heading and where you want to go, and I guess obviously having the support of the company as well, it's massive, right? Like if they didn't trust you or they didn't kind of give you the support to get where you are, I think that's obviously a very important one as well.
Definitely. Cool. Yeah, I have a CEO who definitely believes in marketing, which has definitely helped me to build what we've built today.
Yeah, that's cool. So if you like thinking back of the days when you were kind of still growing into the CMO role, what type of advice would you give to first time CMOs or people that are kind of getting started in their marketing journey and want to become CMO one day?
Yeah, I'd say like the number one thing is that you want to be embracing from as early as possible in your career this whole idea of being measured on revenue. So I think this is absolutely fundamental to success when you are in the CMO seat as well. So the reason why is because it enables you to direct your thinking and your strategy in places that actually are going to make meaningful business impact. And this is what CMOs historically have struggled with, and also marketing organizations and teams as well. So I think by being able to prove out in the numbers and have that seat at the table where you are a revenue driver to the business, and it is absolutely fundamental that your function is right, correctly invested in, et cetera, is going to have like, it just means that everything else becomes more simple. And I had that from the day one I joined Cognizant. I was literally hired with that in mind. It was like, we want to take marketing from being kind of ad hoc, we can't really measure anything, we're not sure what it's impacting on the business line, to a revenue driver that contributes over 50% of that new business number every month. And so that was a really clear initiative for me. And I think that I really recommend that for every CMO marketer out there, that's somewhere that they either, that's something that either a goal for them, or they're in an organization where that is a goal for the marketing org as well. And then I think a big thing is that has been a strength of mine, albeit like sometimes maybe also a weakness, is that, but I think ultimately more a strength, is that I have always stayed operational to an extent. So, you know, obviously when I was a team of three, I was actually the one building a lot of the stuff, and that scaled, like I scaled as much as I could. But even today, like when, I don't know, something happens on one of the brands, I might still be much more operational on the Casper brand than I am on the Cognizant brand. But I am 100%, I guess, able to take on any of parts of like the marketing pieces of our playbooks. And I can deep dive them and kind of then see what's going on inside the engine. I think that's really, really important. Like, yes, the strategic stuff is great, and you definitely need to be able to have those high-level conversations with your execs and your board. But ultimately, the stuff that will give you the right answers and will help you place the bets in the right places is by understanding that operational piece, like inside and out. And I think I've seen it time and again where often like companies as well have hired CMOs and they're not operational at all. They're just like more strategic, and they are disappointed more often than not with that, because they don't get stuff done. Things don't get moving very quickly, because also it, like, if you know you could do something in 2 days, then you know that's a realistic expectation to set for your team. And I think that's also a really important part of it too. And then finally, I'd say like understanding the languages of the other execs that sit within your organization. So I talk about this in the book, but like I'm not a linguist, but I guess I've learned to be a business linguist in the sense that it's really important for me to know like what matters to my CFO, what matters to my CEO, what matters to my sales counterpart, like, and all of those things are different. Like the things that they care about and the way that they want me to talk to them about initiatives that I'm spearheading are very different depending on who I'm speaking to within the business. And so really understanding that and being able to speak in their language has definitely been like a critical part of it as well.
That's super interesting. I guess you almost need to see your stakeholders as like your ICP, right? Because if you think about us as marketers, we need to communicate well with our audiences. We also need to communicate well with our bosses, with our peers, with our team, right? So it's almost like, what makes them tick? What do they care about? So how can you address that? So that's super key. Yeah, I love that. Another question I'd have to use about fostering a culture of innovation and growth, and I guess with everything going on the AI side and things like that, how can marketers leverage these tools and really be innovative in their approach and kind of looking into the future?
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk about like some of the things that I think have led to my team being a super innovative marketing team. And I think number one, it comes down to this thing that I drive home to them, is that we are building our own playbook at Cognizant. Like, where there's no copying anyone else. This is not us looking at our top competitors and saying, cool, that we were just going to copy and paste what they do. And so it's bred into the DNA of the team And also there are a few key philosophies of mine, which I have just like instilled in everyone as well. So things like done is better than perfect. And that's a really big one, because I think often, and I see it in some of my team members when they first join, is like they become their own blockers. And you can find that actually you are less productive with more people if you get into this sort of rhythm of like everything has to be perfect before it's shit. And especially as you scale, expectations might be that you might want things to be more, more perfected before they go live. But I fundamentally believe that we've been successful because we move fast and we get stuff done. So that remains like a key core component for us, as well as being able to like, we don't ever worry about how we're going to scale something as a reason for blocking us trying it. So there, I see so many ideas that get blocked at the ideation phase because there is not a clear way forward in terms of how you would scale that into something that would be repeatable and like, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. We will always be of the opinion, let's just ship an MVP. If we generate the demand, we'll work it out, the problem afterwards. And I don't think my CEO is ever going to be annoyed at me for coming to him and saying, we've got this problem where we've got too much demand, so we need to find out a solution for how we're going to scale it. Like, that's a great thing to be going to your CEO with, rather than, yeah, we haven't really tried anything new this month because we just didn't have anything that we felt like we could scale within the remits of our current resources, et cetera. So another thing that I think is really crucial. And then just the way in which, like, as a team, we look on failure, like, it should never be looked on negatively. So we want to encourage people to be comfortable testing and trying new things. Like, that's super important. And it should also be shouted about and encouraged. And then finally, I think we work and partner people that we think are innovating in key areas that speed up our learnings. And so that helps us to be super innovative as well. And I think all of those things together, like, just mean that we foster like an environment where it's very clear that we want to be like leading from the front, trying new things. And these are the types of things that get rewarded rather than have any like negative impact.
Interesting. And I guess you also have to find the right team that follows that, right? So how do you go about building your team? What sort of traits you look for when you hire somebody to join your team? You know, is there anything particular around innovation or not being too perfectionist or something around that? Or how do you go about hiring and selecting the people for your team?
It's been a really interesting part of the process for us, in that because I have been building in public, we've created for ourselves and our own community, and pretty much all of the talent that we've hired have come inbound with super bespoke cover letters and like CVs talking about how they are passionate about this new way of doing marketing. You know, they are avid listeners to the Loop, Demanders, and all of these, the Refine Labs, and they're really bought into this philosophy. And so that is, for me, more important than someone who's got past experience running part or email automations, like 100%. And so we will over index for that versus like, yeah, the stuff that I know we can teach, because that is far easier to do than to change someone's mindset and to shift that. So that's been our sort of process for hiring. And we've been lucky that we've generated a community with a ton of lots of that coming inbound. And the other thing is that we do look to build up the talent ourselves. So we are hiring a lot of graduates. I actually find I would rather hire someone who's like enthusiastic, energetic grad than someone who's sort of been ground down by the like MQL hamster wheel, the old ways of doing things. And they really struggle to kind of get out of that mindset. Whereas you're going to get a lot more of a open mind and like innovative kind of approach to things through having someone who's like never actually been in any other seat before. So graduates are a great source of that for us.
I love that. Creating your own inbound engine for talent. That is really cool. And I guess obviously that comes with all the work you guys have done in terms of positioning your brand. So not only your customers come to you inbound, but your talent as well. I love that. Very cool. Good. So in terms of what you see in the future, talking about like industry trends and what you've seen, kind of what direction are we going from a marketing perspective, is there anything that obviously you guys being quite innovative and kind of leading the way on doing things differently, what do you see in the future? Where are we heading?
I think it's exciting. Like, I think ultimately, I think there is a bit of an echo chamber in LinkedIn sometimes, and you can feel like this whole shift from lead gen to demand gen off the MQL hamster wheel is like, being talked to death about. But actually, the reality is it's a very small proportion of organizations are actually doing it. But I believe there is more and more of a movement and expectation from buyers that the way in which they want to go through a buying process and be educated by companies is pushing organizations to do this type of marketing. And so that opens up a whole new kind of way in which we have to operate. And that's very exciting. It's like, if I look at one particular role in terms of like where I see massive changes, it's like a content role. It's format agnostic, to be honest, because it depends what your company is and who your audience are. But they are sort of the people who are able to understand the audience, come up with ideas for how best to resonate with that audience. And they would be as comfortable writing a script for video as they are writing, a blog post, as they are TikTok, doing a quick TikTok or whatever it might be. These are the types of content creators that are going to be sitting in that content seat more and more, I believe. And that's super exciting if you think about how that's changed from, the traditional sort of blog, Google type content that was like that content role before. And that's just one example of like how I guess we are innovating as an industry and how things are going to be changing. But yeah.
And I guess a lot of the things we just don't know, right? we're going to experience ourselves and see in the future. But yeah, I fully agree with you on the content side. I think the kind of influencer marketing sort of role is really growing, and we're definitely seeing lots of companies being successful adopting these sort of strategies. So fully agree with that. Right. Well, I guess we're coming to the end of the episode. So really appreciate you coming on, Alice. Thank you so much for sharing all your tips and insights and all your experience. If people want to connect with you, or if they want to buy your book or listen to your book, what's the best way to engage and get hold of you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's definitely the best way to connect with me. And then in my bio, there should be a link through to the book. And it's available also online for free if you want to use the online hub. It's just in a different format. If you want a hard copy book, then Amazon, you can just search Diary of First Time CMO. And there's also audio and versions of it as well.
Brilliant. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Alice. We're going to make sure we put the links as well available for people that are listening to this episode. So thank you very much again for coming onto the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
You've been listening to B2B Revenue Acceleration. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.